This is the April 22 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley. He's at AgTraderTalk.com, along with L&M Commodities' Wayne Nelson, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to us online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's get a short list of things probably that we should take up from each of our panelists for the day. We'll start with you, Merrill Crowley.
There's just a ton of things to talk about if we want to, so anything concerning the markets probably works for me.
Wayne Nelson?
What are the commercials really doing through all this surge in the markets and what's going on, and are our sales to China going to materialize or are they not?
And Kurt Kimmel.
Well, probably the biggest question from a producer's point of view, what do I do in through here?
Well, let's start with that, because I'm sure producers are wondering, what should they do when they have cash corn above $5?
Well, the right thing to be do is do nothing. The market's just been working in everybody's favor here ever since clear black last fall. But the thing you got to decide on is, am I a trader or am I a risk manager? And when you look at these prices at where we're at, and if you look at your cash flow, balance sheets, spreadsheets, or whatever, this has just been a tremendous opportunity to do some conservative scale-up hedging or grain marketing and stick to that plan. We don't like getting over 50% price before the 4th of July. And we stuck with the KISS theory. We continue to keep it simple. We've lost a lot of money by buying puts, but on the other hand, the cash market's gone up. The other side of it is, and it's pretty popular, is to sell some cash and replace with a call option. The options are fairly pricey, so you got to have some type of strategy to manage that volatility. Don't get caught paying a lot of premium up front.
Kurt's right in everything he told you there. I think, like he said, the one thing they can do, sell some cash, but, you know, when you want to buy that call, then you're going to probably have to sell a call on top of it, but you're protected that way. You aren't going to get killed in margin calls. The one thing that's been very getting a lot of calls about is, well, can I buy a put and pay for it by selling an out-of-the-money call? Yeah, that works real good till we go up like this, and they call and you say, hey, send me $5,000, $10,000, or $50,000 for that call you're short. So, you know, I think don't ever sell 2-to-1, especially now. And if you are doing one, think very seriously if the market starts to move against you of buying a call a little bit on top of the one you've sold.
Right now, with basis where it's at, and it can improve from here, but you might want to concentrate more on setting your basis levels and then look to sell your cash or later on in the year when you have a better idea of what you're going to grow. I think the main thing to be watching are your spreads, your inversions, and an inversion simply means the front month's higher than the next month following. And it's unusual to have inversions, and it's usually a very bullish market, as we can tell by how it's moving up. The other thing to watch is basis levels. If those basis levels start to fall back on you, start to decline, then you want to take the time to be watching the market closer, because as long as this inversion stays and the basis stay tight, this market's going to probably continue higher.
I'm reminded of a few years ago, and we mentioned calls, but the idea that producers might want to protect the harvest price option and what that would be like. This happened in July as opposed to in April at the time. But is there any reason that producers would think about using a put strategy to protect a higher HPO?
Well, definitely, anytime you have an opportunity to improve your price at a minimal cost, you probably need to take a look at that, because as we move higher, the risk is to the downside. And as you mentioned here, if that cash bid goes away, because the commercials are, the way I understand, they're covered till about middle of July. And if they're going to extend that coverage, we can hang in there and keep that firm. But what happens in the past is these ethanol guys, they'll take some downtime. They'll just walk away and take some downtime. Your crushers will do the same thing. They'll say they're going to do some maintenance and stuff once you get into July and August. So you got to keep an eye on what's going on in that cash market. And as soon as that signal gives you, look for some opportunities to raise your floor.
This week, President Xi and President Biden are in the same conference on climate change. The Chinese have made announcement, the Chinese government, that is, about corn and its use in livestock feed, bean meal for that matter, and trying to change rations in order to control cost. You mentioned the idea that we had to watch China and the corn exports that were due to go there, I suppose, soybeans too. Can you tell me a little bit about your concerns?
Well, a lot of times when they overbook or they buy, as they see, they saw this coming because they were the ones driving this market. It's the Chinese buying that's made the world market go on up. So they bought actually probably more than they would, could or may need now. They also say they're cutting back the corn in their feed rations, the meal in their feed rations, and supposedly they don't have as many hogs as they said they were going to. You know, we're talking, they say they're going to import a lot of corn this year. But they're cutting back to, instead of 28 million metric tons to 15 million metric tons is their projection for next year. We a lot of times see them roll it forward into the new crop, not cancel it, but what's going on. These are all things that can happen. And we also are told that a lot of their stocks that they have bought, they've been shifted out of the government hands into the private feed makers' hands, and that they have quite a good amount of corn on hand and bean meal on hand for right now. So that's one of the things. We never know what they're going to do. I'm concerned. They keep flying jets over Taiwan, different things. They talk about all these different things. We hope it doesn't happen, but there's a lot of things that go wrong. And let's face it, they are the main buyer of corn and beans in the world right now. They really are pushing it. And if we have any problems where it sets back with them, it's good. Now we continue to hear they're going to take everything they bought this year. They're going to take everything they did. They're going to take it till they don't take it. And it's just like, as we're looking now, the commercials are not buying corn. They aren't doing it right now. And it went out pretty much over the thing. Let's just buy the May contract. Delivery starts next week. Next week from tomorrow, and we will just take delivery. We'll pay our 10 cent out charge at wherever it's at, and we'll transport it to where we need it to have the cash corn because the farmer's just not selling. Argentina's farmers aren't selling. They're too scared of the inflation rate of what's going on in their country. They would rather hold grain. So we've got a tightness of grain right now. In the meantime, while the farmer's in the field, and if the commercials do take delivery of the May contract of corn and beans, we might not have that tightness and that basis that you were all talking about.
So demand has driven the marketplace for some time, as we've talked about here, especially from China. However, supply and weather are driving the market currently, or maybe you have other items that you can discuss. And can you talk a little bit about what that looks like as it relates to Brazil's second crop corn and potentially planting season here in the United States?
Well, the only thing I differ with what Wayne was talking about is simply, I don't think you have to be very concerned about China not taking the corn until such point as they know what size the Brazilian crop is for the safrinha crop. I just read today or yesterday, they're talking about a 16 to 17 million metric ton decline in their production. And if you're using an 80 million metric ton crop, that's about 20%. That's a nasty drought when you get up in the 20 to 25% loss. So my thinking is they'll keep those purchases from the U.S. in place. And then if you look at what 16 to 17 million is, you're talking roughly 630 to 670 million bushels. If they came to the United States to replace that, say they've got enough from the United States, and now they decide to replace that, that takes our ending stocks down to 700 million or 4.7% stocks to use. The tightest I've ever seen the stocks to use was in 1996 in July when we had 3.7% stocks to use.
Can you talk about when these would be shipped and how that works in the relation to the market? So I'm thinking that second crop corn probably coming out of Brazil would be a July shipment or thereafter. So I'm wondering what that means in the marketing year and how you put those together. So what the Chinese have purchased so far from the U.S. government, what they're hedging against, and how that plays out as we get into July and into August.
They're simply hedging against production problems. And we've got one going on right now in Brazil. And if you talk about how much they're going to sell, they opened up their markets to bring corn in. Now, there's an agreement with all those states called, I think it's Mercosur agreement they have, so that they can move grain in, out amongst the Brazilian and the South American areas. But then they have to decide whether or not they're going to drop the requirements for bringing it in from outside. So Brazil is so short on corn right now, they've dropped those requirements. Now you've got a drought cutting away at it. So that's why I'm saying that I think that the U.S. corn is going to stay, and the only time they might get rid of it, as you say, is when we work farther in and get a better idea of what their crop is later in the year. So they may roll over, they may cut back on how much they take from the U.S., but if you start working into that June, July time period that you're talking about, now you're in the midst of the problem area for any kind of weather problems here in the U.S. So if those pop up, then this price hasn't stopped going up for a long time. But there's a lot of ifs. What size is that Brazil crop going to be? How much does China really need? If you look at their markets, what they're saying, they need. But when you look at the Dalian corn prices, the Dalian soybean prices, the Dalian hog prices, they're basically flat. Now, they're high in relation to ours, but right now we're not seeing any movement on the board for their Dalian prices.
So the trading block he was talking about, of course, is the South American trading block. Those countries lowering anything that would keep corn from moving across borders there, and the Brazilians are importing corn from other countries to feed livestock and other things. I'm wondering what your thought here is on that, and then how you put China in context with it in terms of what it's done with wheat as a feed grain in recent months.
Well, China's booked a lot of grain on the world market, and it's a 24/7 logistics moving progress as you look at how they operate on it. And I believe China's going to keep stuff on the books as long as the price is high. Once the price goes down, they'll figure out a way to get out of it if it's lower than that. The thing about China, too, is if you look at other commodities, this sorghum and milo market's just gone through the roof and through here. So they've already looked at some substitutes to take off the heat on their corn and bean values. As far as that southern hemisphere, Merrill's right. They're going to be short there. We'll see if they actually ship corn in from the U.S. If you go back a year or two, Colombia showed up as a buyer of U.S. corn, and it's like, what the heck? So these world exporters are going 24/7.
Well, you know, Chinese are aggressively looking at new crop French wheat right now. They've looked, as Kurt said, at many other things. They've looked at wheat in many other places. They've looked at barley. They've looked at rice. They've bought rice to feed. Now, that's generally not a hog feed. You don't think about it. But they have bought a lot of rice. They're mixing in together. They have said they are going to commit to feeding less corn and bean meal over the next year. Supposedly that helps with their green footprint. I'm not sure how, but I guess they produce more gas if they eat corn instead. But anyway, they're looking at all those different things. The hog herd is not increasing as much as we thought. Remember the African swine flu? We keep hearing it has been worse. They liquidated during that time period. And so there aren't quite as many numbers of hogs being fed, was number one, so we maybe don't need quite as much feed as we're looking at. And they are diversifying immensely. And we're talking about looking at new crop corn now from the U.S. We're looking at wheat, barley. I know down in the Mid-South, the Milo price, I think, was $1.65 over. So that was tremendous. So they're looking at a lot of different things. It doesn't have to all be corn and beans.
Turn your attention to here in the United States. There's been a pause because of cold weather and the planting of the corn and the soybean crop across the whole of the U.S. Farmers probably should pick up next week unless there's very much rainfall. However, the soy-corn ratio has changed, and I'm wondering whether you're hearing from producers whether that will change their acreage mix or not.
I don't think that's going to have a whole lot to do right now. Many people had their crops, had their chemicals on. I shouldn't say they had the chemicals on. They had the nitrogen on. They had their field work done. They've decided already what they're going to plant. And as the Farm Doc article just said today, there's usually not a lot of switch just because of price change after this point. To me, that decision is made once you see the February average for prices on what they're going to plant, if they're going to change anything. The planting has been delayed a little bit. That kind of takes away from the part that they love to plant corn. They're going to plant more. But this planting thing right now seems to be overly done because they can have this thing planted in about a week. This stuff goes in the ground really quick anymore. So the old idea was what, May 15th, May 20th, then you had a problem after that. And we're talking about problems here in April simply because things are tight.
You know, Scott Irwin, of course, writing the article on the Farm Doc page about acreage shifts or lack thereof, and how much really it can move. I think in an earlier article, and I didn't read all of the article from today, but one from last week, talking about maybe 3 million acres in total split between corn and soybeans. Gary Schnitke this week also posting an article to the Farm Doc Daily website, this time around the price of fertilizer. And it still says, you know, soybeans are a much better option, primarily because the price of fertilizer, anhydrous ammonia in particular, has gone up so sharply since last fall.
Well, I don't think it's this crop year. It'd be more for next crop year if you're going to start pushing the pencil on it. But my gosh, there's guys done with beans. I mean, beans went in, and the old adage was, you get in early, plant corn, keep planting corn. But I think if you get in early this year, you might keep planting beans for the most part. The big question is the acreage numbers even right on their survey? I mean, the liability or the accuracy of these surveys, you don't know. But there's room for zigging and zagging, but the market is higher, the fact that the trade believes we're not going to buy or have more extra acres.
I think Kurt's absolutely right. I think that the one thing that I'm looking at is not maybe taking corn acres from bean acres, but maybe planting a lot more of the prevent plant acres than what the government said in the March 31st report. I think we could pick up extra acres. Now, there's a big feeling amongst farmers now that the statistics say early April planted beans produce 10 bushel more, and we're seeing, as Kurt said, a lot of guys are putting beans in first, corn in second, or running two planters at the same time, and we've seen more beans planted in April than I've ever seen in my area, and talking north and south both. So whether there's going to be more acres than what the government suggested, I think there's just going to be more acres of corn and beans and Milo or whatever, but of cash crops planted this year than what's been planted over the last few years. Okay, they didn't get planted a lot in the last couple of years because of too wet, you know, couldn't get in, it was that way. It ain't that way, and with the crop insurance prices the way they are, why would you not plant into dry dirt?
Speaking of dry dirt, are we still concerned about the western United States, particularly the northwestern part of the Corn Belt and dry conditions there?
Sure we are. And we're still watching that formation that Snodgrass was talking about. And it basically is a backward C, cold water running from Alaska through Canada through the U.S. right along the coastline. And that's still there, and it seems to be still pretty prominent. And according to him, and it's just one part, I'm sure, but according to him, that was what existed back in 2012. And you talk to guys and they'll say, well, the reason I don't want to plant is because I'm going to have a drought. So far, you don't have a drought with the seed. You don't have a drought with the one in the ground right now. But it could become a problem, no doubt. Go back to 1988, 1989. And I remember that really well because 1989 wasn't looking a whole lot better as far as moisture was concerned. But right around July, we got a full one-inch rain, and the market dropped. Go to 2000. That year was number four. Even at the end of the year, it was the fourth ranked in the Palmer Index at that time, fourth ranked driest. And we got a rain on May 3rd. Prices went to 273 and a quarter on May 3rd. And by August, they were $1.85. What will matter this year is, are we going to get the just-in-time rains, even if we don't have the best temperatures and best rain pattern is it going to be just in time?
We talked a great deal about corn and marketing cash, corn up front, anything producers need to do as it relates to risk management for soybean.
I failed to mention when I was talking corn is that you might want to consider covering what you don't have covered on your insurance with some sort of sale. But I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do the same thing with beans in looking at locking in basis and then seeing if you're going to sell further down the road. Again, watch your spreads, watch the inverted market because it's inverted, and watch your basis.
Well, we're going to be watching a lot more closely now that we got to these very, very lofty levels. And I think, and we're going to be watching the basis levels to see when we maybe pull the trigger. It sounds funny that we'd be watching basis instead of the board, but I think we're going to be watching the basis levels. If they start to slip, I think we're going to be pushing our sales forward because then the commercials are going to be getting their hands on it. They're going to be backing off some of this. And that might happen before next week from tomorrow when it's first delivery day for May contracts to see if the commercials did really step up to take delivery.
When you talk about the dry areas up there, the barley and the hops, that's important, man. We got to have some barley and hops. We can't have that crop get hurt. It could be an inflationary atmosphere for some people who enjoy those products. But that's kind of the fringe acre area. And if they don't have enough moisture to get stuff germinated, you might see a little acreage shifting around up there. Like here, we've had wet weather and guys have switched, but they might be switching due to dry weather. So we'll see how that unfolds. As far as to add a little bit what Merle Wayne said there, we got to stick to the plan. If you've got a hedge on, you got to manage that and stick with it. Because if you come out of a hedge and all of a sudden something happens somewhere and the market goes down, you've defeated the purpose here. So stick to your marketing plan. You can adjust it as you go. There's some creative ideas to help weather the storm here.
What are the things that we should be watching that we haven't talked about today? I know in past, recent past programs, inflation has been mentioned more than once. And a few other items. What's on your list?
I haven't got anything really to add to that. The only thing that I'm looking for, and I think it's wise to kind of sit down once a week, go over what you've seen in the markets, and ask yourself, what is out here right now that could stop this rally from coming? We don't want to think that way. We want to think it's going to go on forever, and the prices are great. But we all know that's not going to happen. So sit back and start talking to yourself and saying, well, is this going to be something that could stop us? Is this? I'm looking at the bigger one-day type stopping points is we have a problem with China. They invade Taiwan or Russia. It invades Ukraine. Now, today I read they were pulling some troops out from that Crimea area. So that may be finally settling down. But the China thing doesn't seem to want to go away. So those two things are big on my mind. Other than that, I watch the charts. I watch the technicals there, and I watch what's happening in the fundamentals. And right now, fundamentals have kind of let me down, and the charts have let me down. The old adage of watch your basis, watch your spreads is the thing right now that I'm moving with.
The one item that I think that you have told us over and over, at least during this program, that may be a stopper is the May deliveries for both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been talked about great things. They said that basically the May contract is going to become the commercials month. They're going to look at it. They're going to say, how much coverage do we need to make sure we can keep our ethanol plants running, our soybean processing plants running, our export commitments going and without going along the way. So, you know, that. But another big thing that's going on now that's really screwing things up in the fertilizer and everything else is the transportation industry right now. They can't find truck drivers. They're having trouble moving stuff off barges. The containers are being backed up and held up all over. There's a whole lot of stuff that way. So the supply of fertilizer and grains getting to the Gulf, all those things are a big hit. But I think all the one, you mentioned one there, the one's a big, it's inflation. Food costs up 10 to 15%. Gasoline up, you know, 20 to 30%. All those things, those are going to take away from all this free money right away from the people. Guy, if you work a factory job, you make so much an hour, you work 40 hours a week, all of a sudden you're putting another $20 in your gas tank, you're putting another $15 at the grocery store. You don't have the disposable cash.
May options also expire on Friday, and it'd be interesting to see how that offsets. There's guys that bought options for 20 cents and are worth a buck, buck and a half, and plus they did the futures and sold the calls and vice versa. So May options, something to watch on Friday. The other thing to watch, too, is the bean oil market. A lot of talk of putting bean oil into jet fuel and so forth, and I still call it TT, Todd's Trade, that bean oil market. Something to watch, this world vegetable oil market's very, very strong. Technically, just look at a chart. We had a rally, we went sideways. Now we've broken up, another leg going up. That sideways congestion period there is halfway to wherever we're going.
Does that look like a pennant to you? Is that what happened there?
Well, it depends which month. Which commodity you're looking at, there's all kinds of stuff, but as long as we keep making higher highs and higher lows, you got to consider this trend still good.
So we are in that place where the technicals really have opened up to the top side, because there's not much resistance above us, it appears.
Well, I kind of thought this corn around this 640 area would stall out, because that's about 62% back up to the $8 high, but right now I see no reason to go back, test the all-time highs, as long as these commodity funds want to keep piling on the longs.
Getting back to the bean oil real quick, the December chart on the daily has a head and shoulders pattern that is very clear. And again, you have to look at so many charts sometimes. And that's talking about a high at 52.78 for the Dece. That's $3.14 higher than the recent high. We have gaps on the charts. A gap of 549.5 to 684 is not filled yet in the continuous chart. In the Dece corn, we have a gap from 632.25 to 709.25, which hasn't been filled yet, and we haven't even reached that area yet. So we did have, if you're wanting to know from the past, we had July corn at 825.5. Dece corn has a high of 849. For the beans, we have a July high at 1679.5, with the November beans being at 1789 as a high back in 2012.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. We'll start with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, the CME is probably going to be one of the people to try to stop this rally, because whenever we get running like this, they raise the margins, and that sort of puts a stop to some of the things. So watch if they raise the margins more than a little bit.
Kirk Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. Your final word?
Yeah, I agree with Wayne. Whenever we start raising those margins, watch that. It's not to protect the funds. It's protect those guys, that small guys that bought in, and make sure that they're liquid. But the other thing to watch, too, is the option premiums. As soon as they start taking some premium out of these options, that's usually a sign we're close to a top two.
Bates Commodities, of course, is in Normal, Illinois, and at AgTraderTalk.com out of Watseka, Illinois, Merrill Crowley has been with us.
Okay, we have some synthetics for tomorrow, since the May and the July were up limit on the corn. 652 on May and 633 on July. RGO did a real good job of looking for signs, and I want to go over them again. Not responsive to bullish news, domestic basis breaking, board spreads buckle, and there's no signs of any of those happening. Spot soy crush margins weakening, and weekly export sales plunging.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. We find and listen to our programming anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Merrill Crowley, Wayne Nelson, and Kirk Kimmel. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.